Cavalcade of Kings. Charles the First, Part Two. John Felton was executed for the murder of Buckingham, and Charles had now tried to govern the kingdom without the aid of his favorite. He disagreed with the Puritans. Then he disagreed about the payment of duties on exported and imported goods, which duties he had taken without the sanction of Parliament, and which many people refused to pay. The king seized the goods of those people, and one man amongst them, who was a member of Parliament, took the matter up with Sir John Eliot, a member of the House of Commons. At the moment, we find Sir John addressing the House on the subject.
It is an outrage, gentlemen. And I say that the Customs House officers who seized this man's goods should be sent for and punished.
Interrupting the honorable member, but a message has arrived from the king exonerating the Customs House officers, whom his majesty says acted by his orders. His majesty also commands Parliament to adjourn for a few days.
I protest, gentlemen. The king, saving his majesty, must not play battledore and shuttlecock with the government of the country. I have brought some strong resolutions forward against his majesty's chief instruments, and I call upon the speaker to put them to the vote.
I have been commanded otherwise by the king.
Stop! Halt! Valentine! Hold the speaker! Don't let him leave the chair. Once he does, he automatically adjourns the house.
We've got him, Sir John. He can't get away.
Tis well. Gentlemen, I now ask you to vote that anyone who preaches the doctrines which the Puritans think wrong, or anyone who pays or collects duties without the consent of Parliament, is an enemy to the country.
Aye. And what is this I see?
Your majesty.
Speaker of the House of Commons, held by force to his chair. Guards, arrest these two ruffians who lay such rough hands upon a faithful servant of the king. As for you, Sir John Eliot, you shall be taken before the council to answer for your words in the House tonight.
Sire, it is the privilege of every member of the House not to answer out of Parliament for anything they may have said in it. And I claim that privilege.
A prison in the Tower awaits you if you don't answer, my red-faced bull.
Even the king has no right to imprison a man who is guiltless of any crime.
Odd watch ye, do you dare bandy words with me? Guards, to the Tower with him. Silence, ye vipers. I will have no more of you and your treachery. Parliament is dissolved. Dissolved, you hear? In future, I shall govern the country without your Parliament. For I am the King of England, not the puppet of the people.
For 12 years, Charles ruled England unlawfully and despotically, seizing his subjects' goods and money at pleasure, and punishing according to his unbridled will all who ventured to oppose him. William Laud, Archbishop of Canterbury, was the king's right-hand man. The people at last demanded another parliament. It met on November 1640 and was called the Long Parliament. Its first act was to impeach Strafford and Laud, the chief ministers of Charles' tyranny. Strafford was beheaded on Tower Hill. Laud was imprisoned. It is now 4 years later, and we find King Charles and his wife Henrietta together. Charles is pacing up and down the room in great agitation.
Calm yourself, Charles. Your agitation will avail you naught. The execution of Cardinal Laud will take place, and nothing he can do will stop it.
If I had loyal troops, I'd stop it.
Ah, troops. As forgotten when he tried to rescue Strafford from the Tower, you had 200 men at arms with you. They were not allowed to enter. Do not attempt such a crazy thing again, unless you want a howling mob to force its way in here, as they did at Whitehall 4 years ago. Laud is an old man. His period of usefulness is over. Put him out of your mind. The executioner's acts will only forestall the sight of the grim reaper by a few short weeks.
Henrietta, there are times when I think you are more devil than woman. What has changed you from the sweet, docile creature you once were?
England has changed me. England, the devil's cauldron of treachery, tyranny, and heresy. But a man's daytime friend is his nighttime assassin. I hate it, loathe it. And I implore you to send me back to France, to my own people.
I did not know you felt like this, Henrietta. I am sorry. You are free to return to France whenever you care to do so.
Charles, forgive me.
No. Not another word. It is only to be expected. What use the moon when its light is hidden by a cloud? What use a king when his throne totters beneath him?
That bell, what does it portend?
The hour of Lord's execution. Leave me, Henrietta. Leave me, lest the sight of my tears brings a look of contempt into your eyes. I fear me, I could not bear contempt where love once shone.
Charles.
Leave me. If you have one spark of pity left in your heart, leave me alone with my bitter, bitter misery.
Here comes the priest. See his red cheeks. He's rouged and painted like any sin woman, lest we behold the pallor with which fear for his cursed neck has whitened them. How now, old priest? Hast forgotten the torture I endured at your hands when my ears were cut off and my nose split in the pillories? Now it is my turn to laugh. I enter spit upon thee, thou shaggy old cockroach.
My son, you will have the satisfaction of seeing me die. Is not that sufficient revenge for any wrong I have done you in the past?
Cardinal Lord, see where his altars and his duckings and cringings have brought him. Thou priest of Baal, thou raging tyrant.
You are very bitter, my son. Truly my sin against thee must have been of great enormity. Who are you?
William Prynne, a barrister who opined that all bishops were trumpery and the inventions of men. For this I was fined £1,000, pilloried, and disfigured for life. Now I rejoice to know that although I have lost both ears, you are soon to lose your head. Come, mount the scaffold. The executioner is waiting for thee. Ah, he's reached the top at last. If faith, I thought the task beyond his bony spindle shank.
Good people, good people. Ye howled round the Parliament at Westminster for blood. Though I am not only the first archbishop, but the first man that hath ever died by an ordinance of Parliament. All my life I have labored to keep a uniformity in the services of God. This I have done according to my honest belief. If I have acted wrongly, then let God and him alone judge me. I forgive my bitter enemies and their slanders and persecutions, and I ask God to forgive them and to also forgive this servant of Parliament who fidgets so impatiently with his axe, the weapon of my destruction. Good friends, I will not keep you from your prey. See, I kneel in readiness. Move, good people, I pray thee, lest my blood be spilt upon thee. Lord, receive my soul, and have mercy upon me, and bless this kingdom with peace and prosperity. Thy will be done.
There is no need to trace Charles through plot and counterplot with Catholics and Presbyterians, with Parliament and the army. Enough that, quitting his last refuge, Oxford, he surrendered himself to the Scots on May the 5th, 1646, and they, in turn, handed him over to Parliament on the following January. Charles faced his judges bravely and with dignity. It is now 4 days after the trial. The death sentence has been passed, and Charles has been taken back to Whitehall, where we find him with Oliver Cromwell.
Cromwell, I have been weak, but I have never lied, nor has vice ever claimed me for its own. Yet my whole reign has been beset with difficulty, calamity, and treachery. Tell me, Cromwell, was I wrong in sacrificing Strafford? Should I also have sacrificed my wife, faith, and crown?
Sire, I am a soldier, not a philosopher.
Sire, you still address me as sire.
You are the king. I have always served the king loyally until...
You found, as everyone has found, that he was untrustworthy, vacillating, unable to lead or to be led, intolerant of opposition to his will, superstitious, unsympathetic, and unable to see both sides of a question. I do not blame you, Cromwell, nor do I blame my accusers, for they are right. That is the tragic pity of it all. They are right.
Sire, is there anything I can do to lighten your burden of grief?
My father's heart would bless your name if you could bring my two children to me before I die. Their kisses would comfort me on the scaffold. Their prayers would bring peace to my soul.
They shall come to you, sire. I'll see to it myself.
Thank you, Oliver Cromwell, for your generosity towards a fallen enemy.
King Charles of England has never been my enemy. He has been his own.